$7 trillion of our economy have already been lost as a consequence of this military expansion. It is but the little beginning.
North Korea feels that the nose has been thumbed at them, and they've been rather slow to take up the challenge.
There is a need for enormous tolerance to gain understanding of our joint connectedness.
I think we should let the UN take its course and see what happens, and there needs to be peace in this world, and that's what we advocate here.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Tuesday, January 7th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown.
Please raise your right hands. Do you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that you take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which you are about to enter? So help you God.
I do.
Congratulations.
The 108th Congress was sworn in today, and the Senate passed a five-month extension of emergency federal unemployment benefits 2 hours after getting sworn in, with Republicans now in control of both houses. The $7 billion jobless assistance package was the first order of business for the Senate under new Majority Leader Bill Frist of Tennessee. The House was to take up the bill tomorrow, a day before it has to be signed by President Bush to avoid any delay in checks to about 750,000 jobless workers. But not all on the Hill were delighted with the GOP takeover. Peace Watch producer Reem Kathuda from Pacifica Station WPFW in Washington ventured up to the hallowed halls of Congress and prepared this report.
We leave behind the work of the historic 107th Congress, but we are also confronted by the most brutal, the most senseless, and the most tragic attack on our citizens and our nation's history.
At WPFW, in a backdrop of jazz, one of the flagships of the station, we have another flagship, Damo Smith with Black Voices for Peace. What's your comment on the 108th Congress sworn in today?
Well, this is going to be a very challenging congressional and political year, because as the nation marches more towards war against Iraq and continues its unqualified support for the Israeli occupation of Palestine, orchestrated by the Bush administration, billions are being spent on militarism and armaments and intervention, and there are massive cutbacks anticipated in social and human needs programs. So the appropriations process in the Congress becomes a very important political agenda for the people's movement, as well as stopping this march towards war and support for Israeli aggression and occupation. I'm very hopeful that the Congressional Black Caucus will continue to be the conscience of the Congress. It has new leadership now. Elijah Cummings is the new chair. He's a progressive man. He certainly is against the war. He's raised questions about the war. And so it's my hope that through his leadership and the leadership of others like John Conyers and Jesse Jackson Jr., Maxine Waters, Barbara Lee, and other progressive members, that we're going to see more stepped up opposition to the war voiced by them and others, and that they will help continue to be the conscience of this congressional body.
The party is at the Hyatt on the Capitol Hill. Hello, I'm with the Pacifica Radio Network. Can you give me some comments about this 108th Congress and also what you stand about the issue of the war on Iraq?
I'm Frankie Harvey from North Carolina. I think the Congress should bring back the draft, and I think if they have everybody's children in there, politicians wouldn't be so quick to call for war. Now it doesn't affect the people. They don't seem to be caring about it. And we're rushing our boys and girls and young men and women off to a war that we have no idea where it's going to end.
My name is Pat Ford, and I'm Executive Vice President with the Service Employees International Union. I think we should be very, very careful about sending our armed forces to Iraq. I think we should let the UN take its course and see what happens, and there needs to be peace in this world, and that's what we advocate here. I hope that the 108th Congress would be better on this issue and not as much of a hawk as the 107th Congress, but I'm not very hopeful because all the houses are held by the Republican Party, and they tend to be pro-war. And I'm very concerned about our civil liberties. You know, the rights of immigrants in this country is very important. There's the issue of health care and having access to health care. There's so many things that we can do domestically in this country that we could spend our money and our resources on without going to war when it's unnecessary.
And how is the parties?
They're just getting started, but they were great. I just left the ceremony for the Congressional Black Caucus, and it was a very moving and warm ceremony, and I wish Elijah Cummings, the new chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, the best.
Hello. How was the swearing in? How was the ceremony?
Oh, just fabulous. It's so good to so many articulate African-American leaders together. And you get a sense of real commitment to the welfare of those who are less fortunate in the country. So I think we're going to be very well represented in this very challenging year, because the battle is going to be to renew the war on poverty as we move into this decrease in funding, as all the funds are diverted to making war on other things. So it's really gratifying to see that we have strong folks in place to take the message forward so that we can hopefully at least preserve some of the resources for folks who need it the most.
How about the build-up for the war on Iraq?
They say one-third, in fact, the forces are African-American. Congressman Rangel's position about reinstituting the draft is something I hope that can be fully debated, because yes, there is value in having that boot camp kind of experience for some of our young at-risk African-American males. However, we don't want a disproportionate number of them coming back in body bags. I think people understand that. I'm retired military. I'm Dr. Faggett, pediatrician here in Washington, and I was just talking to a retired Marine captain, Chico, and he was saying, we don't need to study war no more. Those of us who have been close to it know the real tragedy, and hopefully some of the restraint that Colin Powell and folks like him who've been there express can really prevail. The president says he is trying to maximize diplomatic means, but as we see the troops moving into place, it's clear that we're getting very close. And I think it makes it even more important that this Black Caucus leadership really let us have a full debate on the issue. Can we indeed take care of the poverty-stricken here in this country? How are you going to have a tax cut and a war and still take care of folks' domestic issues? It's really hard to conceive at this point.
I am a press secretary for one of the Congressional Black Caucus members, Congressman Bobby Rush out of Chicago, Illinois. And it's always an uplifting experience to see these members who are, although in the minority, really represent the majority of America, which is working people, diligent people, people who still believe in the system and in the fairness of government.
For the war on Iraq, how does your representative stand?
He is at this time reluctant to see us just rush into Iraq. He's pleased with the fact that the UN inspectors are there and that there seems to be at least some precaution and some waiting that's taking place before we just rush in there. But it's a concern of his because there are a lot of lives that are going to be at stake, not only on foreign soil, but also here on domestic soil as well.
The Senate building is full of reporters, cameras, TVs, on the balconies, freezing, drinking coffee, or sitting on the inside, waiting, being moved. And identify yourself for our listeners.
Marv Ramstead from Minnesota. My son is... This is the seventh time that he's being sworn in for the Congress, and I've attended every one of them. It's quite an occasion in our family.
You cannot. I'm sorry, I'm in a hurry. I'm sorry.
I won't walk with you. Okay. Can you identify yourself?
Henry Bonilla from Texas. I support the president and his efforts to try to find a peaceful resolution, but if it does happen that we have to engage Iraq, then unfortunately that's what we'll have to do.
Do you think it's a matter of oil?
I think only foolish people who are generally anti-Bush are the ones who are spreading rumors about this being a conflict over oil. This is about national security. It's about biological warfare. It's about weapons of mass destruction. It's about a ruthless leader who has killed millions of his own people and is amassing a lot of weaponry to use against the West.
Who am I speaking with?
Jonathan Deutsch.
And who's your parent who's being sworn in?
Peter Deutsch.
And he's your father? From where?
Florida.
They're saying they might take young people to war. What do you think?
That's not good.
Who am I speaking with?
Danielle Deutsch.
Your father voted for the war on Iraq. Is this true?
Yes.
What do you think about that?
Like, in a way, it's, like, scary, but... And also it's not, sort of, because, like, the... Like, we have to fight back.
I'm in the rotunda where all the representatives and the Senate have to pass by as they leave, and that's where the press is.
I'm John Kerry from Massachusetts. Today is a very positive day where the Senate renews itself and hopefully gets a sense of purpose about the needs of the country. Jill?
How about the draft?
I've always had a position through my life as very supportive of the concept, but I don't think that the nature of this conflict predicates that. I think at this particular moment, it's not necessary for this conflict at this particular time.
For Pacifica's Peace Watch, reporting from WPFW in Washington, D.C., I'm Reem Katkhuda.
The U.S. military command that would run a war against Iraq is dispatching much of its battle staff to a Persian Gulf base equipped to coordinate a large-scale land, sea, and air war. Officials say the command post at Camp Saleh in Qatar is being readied in case President Bush decides that military force is needed to disarm Iraq's President Saddam Hussein. President Hussein says Baghdad is ready for a war if it happens, and accused the UN weapons inspectors of being spies. He says the only way now to avoid an invasion is for the Bush administration to seek a way out of what is regarded as a mess. Dennis Halliday, former head of the UN Oil for Food Program, is presently in Baghdad. Dennis, can you briefly summarize for us the mission of the Oil for Food Program and tell us how oil factors into this war equation on the part of the Bush administration, if at all?
Right. The Oil for Food Program was set up by the Security Council in response to very considerable pressure from NGOs and from other governments as to the humanitarian consequences of the sanctions in the early 90s. After prolonged negotiations, Iraq gave up its sovereign rights vis-a-vis oil sales and agreed to this program, whereby initially some $4 billion worth of oil was sold each year, and that has increased to $10 billion, and then finally without a ceiling. The revenue goes into the accounts of the United Nations, out of which some 35% is skimmed off the top by the UN for overheads and for compensation, and the balance is then used by Iraq for paying contracts negotiated by the government and approved by the 661 Committee of the Security Council. It's a long political and somewhat bureaucratic process which has made purchasing very difficult for the Iraqis. But I must say the Ministry of Trade has done a brilliant job, and they've managed to feed 23 million people since the middle of 1997. The inadequacy of the diet has been noted, of course, many, many times. It's calorifically low, but much more seriously, it's low in animal proteins, it's low in vitamins and minerals. So we don't have starvation, happily, in Iraq, but we do have famine conditions. Low birth rates, for example, are very common. We have some 12% of acute and chronic malnutrition amongst children under five. And we have an economy and a life that has been crushed by sanctions over 12 years. It's a very painful process. And Oil for Food, I think, has in some ways done a good job in protecting the people from starvation, but it's sustained a program of sanctions that has been crippling to the people and to the economy. The feeling here is that this war, imminent war, is not about weapons of mass destruction, that the inspections under Resolution 1441 are something of a charade, and that they're designed to provide for Mr. Bush UN cover, UN respectability, you might say, for his own ambitions to attack the Middle East in the context of a neo-colonial endeavor to remap the Middle East, to remap it to suit U.S. interests. and in particular, of course, the protection of oil. And the oil of Iraq represents some 120 billion barrels. At a time when the relations between Saudi Arabia and the United States seem rather fragile, and therefore Iraqi oil becomes increasingly important to the well-being of the United States economy. I mean, that is the view from this point of view. It's about oil, it's about American military presence in the Middle East, and it's about protection and or expansion of Israeli interests.
Well, that's the view from Baghdad. What is your perspective, Mr. Halliday? Do you support that view at all, or do you think that there's more to the equation?
No, I don't think so. I think my view is just about identical with that. I've always felt that the UN inspections were something of a charade, that there was no expectations that weapons, or certainly not nuclear weapons, would ever be found here. I think oil is a driving factor in terms of American interests, given the relations with Saudi Arabia. I think that is what it's all about, and that's what I've been saying, I think, for several weeks.
And if the U.S. were to invade, they would automatically gain control of the 120 billion barrels of Iraqi oil?
Well, that is the assumption. I mean, what I've been watching on television in the States and so on is that the intention is to invade and, in fact, to occupy the country, which would include certainly taking over the production of the oil wells in this country. The intention, I believe, is to privatize, but certainly to take over, restructure, and expand, I suspect, oil production, which would give the United States control over a very substantial level of oil production from Iraq, a very high-quality, low-cost oil, which would allow the U.S., of course, to satisfy its own economic energy requirements, but also, of course, provide or be involved in the process of supporting Europe, Japan, and other countries. So I think it's a game plan that, from the very selfish point of view in terms of the U.S. economy, makes sense. It's just that it's totally unacceptable in terms of international law, in terms of the United Nations Charter. There's no legal justification for aggression against Iraq. They've been punished already for 12 years. I think if this happens, I think the United States will find itself in very serious isolation. I think it's very damaging to the United Nations. I think it's very damaging to the United States and its own best interests in the longer, bigger sense of the word. One needs to be optimistic. I very much hope that more and more Americans will understand what is about to happen. They will believe that the Iraqi people do not deserve to be punished yet again through warfare, that the civilian deaths will be undoubtedly heavy. And that's a horrific possibility. And that a war against Iraq is going to set off chaos in the Middle East. It will not stop with Iraq. And that's a very dangerous phenomenon for everybody in this part of the world, and ultimately for the United States. And I don't believe that Americans who understand what may happen believe this is correct. I think many Americans now do not believe that the price of oil is worth giving up American lives, and hopefully not giving up anybody's lives, including those of the Iraqi people. So I think we desperately hope there'll be a rethink in Washington, that the American democratic system will prevail, and that Mr. Bush will understand that he does not have the support he needs in the Middle East, in Europe, nor at home amongst the American people.
Dennis, Saddam Hussein says that UN weapons inspectors are spies, and he says Baghdad is ready for war. Is he just a desperate man at this point trying to find a way out of the massive devastation the U.S. seems bent on unleashing against the people of Iraq?
Well, I think those two statements should be read independently of each other. I think he said in his speech he was simply highlighting to the people of Iraq that things look extremely negative. They don't feel that the American ambition to attack Iraq can be stopped, nor can Mr. Bush and his intentions, and that people should be prepared and ready for the worst. That was an independent statement of his comment, I believe, on the inspectors. What he said was that the inspectors have been very demanding, but the Iraqi authorities have managed to meet all of their requirements, no matter how little time they've been given. But when in the various sites, inspectors have been taking photographs of strange things or asking questions unrelated to weapons of mass destruction. And this would seem to be more related to legitimate Iraqi defense as opposed to weapons of mass destruction. I think that's what his comments relate to. And the government officials have taken action to distribute foodstuffs and managed to distribute the equivalent of 3 months rations of the Oil for Food program, which is managed, as you know, between the UN and the Iraqi government. And they hope to distribute another 2 months of rations, I think, shortly, together with some supplies of water, which is more problematic. And in that case, they're encouraging people with land to drill their own wells, and they themselves are drilling wells for other parts of the city where the people live in high-rise apartments or whatever, in the hope that they can use groundwater here to provide good water if and probably when the United States manages to stop electric power production, which in turn will, of course, stop water treatment and distribution and sewage systems. They want to avoid, of course, the 1991 situation where bad water growing out of bombing of infrastructure led to waterborne disease such as diarrhea, dysentery, typhoid, cholera, with very, very frightening and deadly consequences.
That was Dennis Halliday, former head of the UN Oil for Food Program, speaking with us from Baghdad. The Stratfor Global Intelligence Report is the subject of this next commentary by Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen of Pacifica Station WBAI in New York.
The Bush administration's national security team has been leaking its final plans for the occupation of Iraq. The plans call for heavy American military presence in the country for at least 18 months, although other people are speculating that it'll be many, many years. There will be military trials of senior Iraqi leaders and a, quote, quick takeover of the country's oil fields. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the Stratfor intelligence report, which is signaling global intelligence and inside information, has an analysis on what it calls a U.S. occupation that will become mired in Iraq for many, many years. It was December 30th that this report was released, and it states the United States has over 100 years of experience in occupying conquered countries, and it gives a long list of those, of course, across American history. But it states that in order for the United States to do this successfully, it must utterly devastate the country involved. And indeed, it says that a precondition is the destruction of that country, and it goes into some detail about that.
The occupation of Iraq will have two facets, a civilian administrator running the economy, rebuilding schools and political institutions, so-called, but the main administrator is the military administrator, similar to General MacArthur in Japan or Clay in Germany after World War II. And the military administrator, who may be General Tommy Franks, head of the Central Command, is really going to be running Iraq after the devastating invasion.
And Maya, the human cost is unimaginable because the Stratfor report makes clear that they intend to project this power throughout the region. Iraq is but the little beginning, and they describe how the destruction, it says ideally, this destruction must not only be of the physical infrastructure of the country, but of its very will to resist. It is going to be a scorched earth policy of total devastation of an already impoverished nation.
Impoverished, devastated, and will the Iraqi people accept this occupation? If you look at the Philippines, 1898 to 1946, the long-standing U.S. occupation, there was much insurgency against the United States. If you look at Haiti, 1915 to 1934, Marines put down a 40,000-person uprising at the cost of thousands of Haitian lives. Again, with the Dominican Republic, the people of the Dominican Republic did not accept the U.S. forces.
Iraq is but the beginning. Syria, Iran, and Saudi Arabia are to follow. The Stratfor reports concludes this will be a messy and protracted occupation, and it is dependent upon the devastation of that country, but the resistance can be expected to be continuous, growing, and real. The human cost is enormous. The people of the United States will be bearing it as well. $7 trillion of our economy have already been lost as a consequence of this military expansion. It is but the little beginning.
This is Maya Schoen.
And Ralph Schoenman.
Host of Taking Aim of Pacifica Station WBAI in New York. While all this buildup towards war has inspired the Department of Corrections Collective to produce this creative expression of War Secretary Donald Rumsfeld.
My understanding, and I hate to even talk about this because some of them contrast it with something that somebody else said that I haven't read or seen, and attempted to find a theme between what I'm going to say and contrast it with something that somebody else said that I haven't read or seen and what somebody else may have said. And I think also what's important is that the president, over a good many years, demonstrated wonderful talent and skill at manipulating the media and international organizations and other countries. When it's the right moment to lean forward, they lean forward. When it's the right moment to lean back, they lean back. And it's a dance. It's a dance they engage in. We'll go week after week after week, stiffing the international community, the UN and others. They then will find that things are going in a way that they're uncomfortable with, and then they will throw out an opportunity of one sort or another and get people, hopeful people, leaning forward saying, see, there's our opportunity. We do have a chance to work with those people. All we need to do is be more accommodating to them. And therefore, they'll swing the discussion and debate that way and kind of play the international community and the UN process like a guitar, plucking the right string at the right moment to delay something and attempt to find a theme between what I'm going to say and contrast it with something that somebody else said that I haven't read or seen and what somebody else may have said. And that's what this process is. The president believes that and has said so. I think what's important is the substance of this discussion, that people lift their eyes up off their shoelaces, where the principal focus must be unconventional weapons.
Rumsfeld Comes Clean was produced by the Department of Corrections Collective. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.